The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello there, this is Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from Our State magazine. Today's reading of Our State is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting our podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. Hey, it's time to break the cover in a brand new issue of Our State magazine, celebrating North Carolina. This one for October 2022. Do you believe it's October already? Anyway, this is our annual Mountain issue. Its theme is Mountain Moods. The word mountain is in black on a sunsetting sky of blue and white and purple, and moods is set right on top of the mountains where all of the misty clouds are, and you get a little more color of yellows and whites in the sunset, but you've also got some of those dark purples over there behind the letter M, if you care. And they have articles like Choose Your Own Experience, Relaxed and Indulgent in the Yadkin Valley, Artistic and Adventuresome in the High Country, Bohemian and Harmonious in Asheville, and Rugged and Wild in the Smokies. We will not, I'm sure, get to all of them, but we'll try to get to as many as possible and learn something more about our state and the towns and its 100 counties. We start, as we always do, with the From Elizabeth column, Chasing Ghosts, by Elizabeth Hudson, Editor-in-Chief. I don't know her height, by the way. I never talk about her. There's always a picture of her. She's always wearing something different. I don't know that I've seen her full height, and I wouldn't probably know it from the picture anyway. Let's just say she's of average height. She's slim. She has long brown hair, parted in the center and coming forward in bangs and hanging straight down to her shoulders. At least this month, I know women change their hair a lot. I can't remember the previous months, but that's what she looks like here. And she's always wearing her glasses. She has rather thick-rimmed black round glasses and a big smile on her face. She's wearing a sort of it looks like a navy blue, possibly black, top, and it has a really unusual pattern. There's some circular objects on there, and then there's patterns within the objects, and that's kind of a grayish or light blue and off-white in all of the patterned circles, which some go horizontal, some go vertical. I've never quite seen anything like it, so I don't know how to describe it. Anyway, this is what she writes in the column Chasing Ghosts. We didn't know for sure they'd be valuable one day. My collection of old comic books, the stacks upon stacks of issues bought for a quarter each from the spinner rack at Man Drug in Asheboro. The ones that I hoarded for years in a corner of my bedroom closet. Oh, I had hundreds. The Archie series, Wonder Woman, Wendy the Good Little Witch, Casper the Friendly Ghost. My parents sold the whole lot for just a few bucks at a garage sale years ago. Gone in a flash. And who knew that those 1970s promotional cartoon character drinking glasses, 49 cents from Hardee's with the purchase of a soft drink, would be worth anything. We had the entire Looney Tunes set, and when Pepsi rolled out a similar campaign a few years later, I was thrilled to get a Wendy the Witch glass. Maybe because of my love for the comic, or that it just seemed seasonal. October, a witch. Come autumn, I'd reach for that glass at nearly every meal. Those glasses are long gone now, relics of another era, fleeting childhood. In October, my mom may have hung a grapevine wreath on our front door, and I seem to remember some dried corn stalks showing up in a bucket on the porch. But otherwise, we didn't decorate for the seasons. We were never Halloween people. In the country, there wasn't much opportunity for trick-or-treaters to come to our door, but that didn't stop my dad from buying plenty of candy just in case. He set out dishes of Hershey's miniatures and bite-sized Snickers by the door, Reese's peanut butter cups in a bowl on the coffee table, Tootsie Rolls in the kitchen. It didn't occur to me until years later that those were the candies that he loved most. Now when I see Halloween candy appear in stores, limited, or rather time-limited, in their orange and black wrappers, I start to feel that shift in the seasons, the transitory time when daylight starts to dwindle, when the morning air becomes cool, when the leaves blaze in reds and yellows, a short-lived spectacle before crimping and falling to the earth. I felt that time shift recently at Grandfather Mountain. I was with a crowd of people who'd gathered at dusk for the synchronous firefly viewing, an extraordinary phenomenon that happens for only a few weeks every year. We spread our blankets at the edge of a service road and stared out across the forest floor, waiting for daylight to fade, for nighttime to fall. You might think that being on top of a mountain in pitch darkness would be eerie, moody. Instead, it was calm, conversations naturally quieting as the evening dimmed. When the fireflies began to flash, at first just a few, and then hundreds in their synchronized rhythm, I heard our soft gasps in the dark, each of us bewitched by this bioluminescent magic show. The flashes came faster, the woods pulsing with the light of those tiny floating beetles. And then, hovering, gliding, mere feet above the ground, the blue ghost fireflies appeared, the ones that glow steadily instead of blinking, like blue-lit lanterns. How lucky we were to catch a glimpse. We took in the firefly show for as long as their light lasted, holding on to the awe aware that their presence was fleeting, like so many that we hold in wonder, like so many that we cherish. Their lights flashed just a beat longer, and then they were gone. And now, as I do each month, I would like to interpret the pictorial, which appears in the center of the magazine each month. Sometimes they call it a pictorial, sometimes they just write it like an article. This one doesn't have the word pictorial, or photo essay, I believe is the term that they use. But this one says written in stone, and it has one of those simply unbelievable pictures. I'm still mystified by this. We're looking at a sheer rock face. This one has been well aged. It's actually brown. It's not the gray of stones. It's really two tones of brown, a lighter brown and then a very dark brown, as if some mold or lichen or something has come on it. And the amazing thing about it is the person who is holding on to the side of this cliff with just hands. It's a really amazing thing. This is a woman. She has red long pants on and some shoes, which I'm sure are specially oriented toward being able to grip the tiny crevices of the rocks. She is not suspended from above. She does have pitons, I believe, pounded into the rock in front of her, and she has a rope around her waist, and the rope then goes through the piton that is the hook that is attached to the piton in front of her. It's hanging down about 6 inches, and it's just about at her waist level, and then the rock goes down to another one caught in another little crevice down below. So if she fell, One, hopefully the top one would hold, but if it wouldn't hold, hopefully the next one down, and I assume there's another one down below that. But how you do this, go straight up the side of a cliff, is just beyond my comprehension. She's got 1 foot hanging off in midair on the right, and the other left-hand foot is in a little crack, a little crevice, but it must be like a half an inch, three-quarters of an inch of her foot is there, and she's about to push off with that foot, and she's found a little handhold above with her left hand. Can't see her right hand, so I don't know what's going on. So beyond this, as this rock face continues, it appears to get lower in the distance. We see tree-covered mountainous rock formation, and down below, nothing but trees. So she's essentially above the tree line of whatever is down below her. The caption for this picture says, "In Chimney Rock State Park, Erica Lineberry climbs the spry-look route on Rumbling Bald Mountain, which earned its name from the sounds and tremors like an earthquake and its aftershocks that emanated from the mountain for 6 months in 1874. The title of the whole series is written in stone. I mean, that is the title. It's not written in the stone. It is the title, written in stone. And the little brief description underneath says, according to Cherokee legend, when the earth was created, the great buzzard flew low over the flat land, his beating wings sculpting mountains and valleys below. Today, science offers its own explanations for our state's geological marvels." This is written by Rebecca Woltz. Turning the page, Chimney Rock in Rutherford County. Chimney Rock and the surrounding cliffs were formed more than a half a billion years ago when molten rock cooled and solidified into granite deep beneath the Earth's surface. The granite was later transformed by heat and pressure into Henderson gneiss. That's G-N-E-I-S. I believe it's pronounced gneiss. I apologize if I am mispronouncing it. A type of metamorphic rock found only in the Carolinas and named for the North Carolina county where it was first described. Over the course of millions of years, Chimney Rock was exposed as weather eroded the soil and rock around it. The monolith now towers 315 feet above the mountainside and will appear to grow taller as erosion continues. Getting to the top requires climbing up 499 steps or walking through a nearly 200-foot man-made tunnel, then taking a 26-story elevator, followed by 40 steps. Take your choice. Once there, visitors are rewarded with sweeping views of Hickory Nut Gorge and the rocky Broad River as it flows into Lake Lure. Double page spread here. Caption says, "In the Opera Box viewing area, hikers on the Exclamation Point Trail can see Hickory Nut Gorge, Chimney Rock, and Lake Lure from beneath a rocky overhang." That's where the picture is taken, because we can see the overhang at the top of the picture, and the text that I read a moment ago nicely fits in that dark area. It's white on the dark brown rock above, and then it opens up into this huge panorama of that river flowing down below. There's a street which runs along and then kind of ends at the river, it looks like, and the river goes and it gets wider and wider in the distance, and in the far distance we see the low foothills and their peaks are in sort of a haze. And nearby we see people up on a rocky promontory. It may be the Chimney Rock, because there's a huge American flag there. They do have fences all around, because people tend to go too close to the edge. Things happen, and you get a nice view from there. But this is a nicer view, because you're covered, and it's probably cooler there. Chimney Rock State Park overleaf. Before it became a state park, Chimney Rock was owned by the Morse family. In the late 1880s, Dr. Lucius B. Morse contracted tuberculosis and moved from Missouri to western North Carolina in search of better climate. After seeing Chimney Rock He and his brothers were inspired to purchase the property in 1902. The Morse family owned and operated the attraction for 105 years until the state bought it in 2007, combining the property with the existing Hickory Nut Gorge State Park and renaming it Chimney Rock State Park. Now there's a bigger picture on the right-hand side, a little waterfall in the center. It says Hickory Nut Falls at Chimney Rock State Park drops more than 400 feet over a solid mass of Henderson gneiss, or gneiss, I don't know how it's pronounced, or gneiss. A waterfall, one of the tallest in the state, was featured in the 1982 movie The Lost of the Mohicans. Now, it's a very small waterfall, width-wise. There's a lot of smooth granite cliff here, but there's just one spot where the waterfall is coming out. I guess this is taken in fall because there's a lot of amber color in all of the trees down below and above on the top of those rocks. Pilot Mountain in Surrey County, standing alone 1,400 feet above the ground, Pilot Mountain's big pinnacle is one of the most recognizable landmarks in the state. The Sora Indians, the earliest known inhabitants of the Soratown Range in this area, used the mountain as a navigational landmark, calling it Jemoki, meaning a great guide or pilot. The knob, and it does look like a knob, it's very round and sticks up like a knob, is made of quartzite or sandstone that's been fused into rock by heat and pressure. This type of rock is resistant to erosion. So while the Soratown Range, once comparable to the Rockies in height, was worn down by millions of years of wind and rain, Pilot Mountain stood firm. So we're looking across here, and what we see is an upward sloping bank of trees. There's a glimpse through them. There's some rock in there, definitely, but nothing sticking out prominently. But you get to the top of this range, and then there's this big circular area of rock straight up on all of the sides, and you can see the strife marks, is that what they're called, showing the different periods of time as it was formed, and different structures. So there's these little horizontal lines that you see on rocks like this. And then at the top, you have trees, and down toward the edges, some of the trees try to get over the edges, and then there's some smaller vegetation that's just creeping over in certain spots. No indication of how you get to the top. I suspect you have to be a mountain climber to do so. On the left-hand side, it says, well, rock climbing isn't allowed on Big Pinnacle. But there are about a dozen climbing spots in Pilot Mountain State Park, including this amphitheater on Ledge Spring Trail. So if you go to the top of Pilot Mountain, that's a no-no. You probably get fined or something if somebody catches you doing it. But there are plenty of other opportunities, plenty of rocks around. And how about Judicula Rock in Jackson County? That's one I've never heard of. No one knows the origin or meaning of the petroglyphs that cover the face of the soapstone boulder in Jackson County, known as Judicula Rock. The rock itself dates to the late Archaic period, between 3000 and 1000 BC. But as for the carvings, theories abound. Cherokee legend says that the markings are the imprint of the hand of Tsleil-Waututh, or the great slant-eyed giant who lived on top of a ridge in the Balsam Range and controlled wind, rain, thunder, and lightning. Others believe that they could be a record of a Cherokee peace treaty or a depiction of a battle. Perhaps so long as the rock remains, so too will the mystery. And here is a nice, nicely trimmed grassy area with a wooden post fence on the side and trees behind, and on the left is a little raised platform. A man is reading a plaque, and in the foreground of the picture is a rock. And it says, a sign at Judicula Rock tells the story of the giant Cherokee legend and maps some of the rock's 1,548 carvings, more than any other known petroglyph boulder in the eastern United States. Not quite sure why this is left out in uncovered area, but that's what it is. There's a close-up here that tries to translate this, I guess. The picture that they have is certainly a lot clearer than looking at the rock itself, which I'm sure was photographed and all sorts of different filters applied to get this. The pictures, you just, it's totally a mishmash of stuff. It's, they're not in a row. It's not characters that somebody was writing. It's just lots of symbols. And for instance, on the there, this is sort of a circular piece. There's a solid line that goes from the bottom center to the top right. And then attached below the line is an, is another line, but it has a dot at both ends. And then there's a line that crosses it. It is a dot. And then there's a little square, and there's a dot inside the square. There's a dot outside the square. There are two objects or, that look like something like a sea creature or a spider or something with multiple legs. One of them seems to have two or three legs. The other one has one, two, three, four, five, six, seven legs. And then above the line, there's just everything you can imagine. There's little crosses with dots on the ends. There's something that looks vaguely like a butterfly. There's lots of lines with dots beside them. I can't help but you think this might just be the work of some kid playing around. And then there's some sort of interpretation written in a language that I certainly don't recognize, so I can't explain it. You'll have to go to Judicolor Rock to figure it out. Oh, the Blowing Rock in Caldwell County. The Blowing Rock, named for the wind, which channeled through John's River Gorge below, blows upward at the sight of the gneiss. According to legend, the gusts there are so strong that a Cherokee brave, after leaping from the rock, was blown back into the arms of his Chickasaw lover. But the history of the rock goes much further. More than a billion years ago, the Earth's the Blowing Rock in ice was formed by heat and pressure miles beneath the Earth's surface. Over millions of years, the rock layers around it eroded away, exposing the promontory. You're not talking about a big promontory here. I would say it's maybe, well, it depends on where you measure it. Its largest part, maybe 10 feet tall. It slopes up at about, 35 degrees or so. And you can walk up about 10 feet and stand at the top. And a person who looks to be about 6 feet tall is standing there. And hopefully they will not jump into the wind. Caption says, from the Blowing Rock, 3,000 feet above the Johns River Gorge, Lex Nix of Winston-Salem takes in the spectacular panorama that includes Grandfather Mountain to the west and Mount Mitchell to the southwest. Then we have Nifty Rocks in Montgomery County. On the western edge of Uwari National Forest near Baden Lake, a collection of boulders known as the Nifty Rocks rises from the surrounding landscape, some as tall as 15 feet. The mountain ridge is composed of silica-rich volcanic rock, but the Nifty Rocks, according to one hypothesis, are composed of greenstone, a different type of rock containing minerals that impart a greenish hue. They're not formed by your typical geological process that you would see for the Uwaris, and that makes them pretty unique, says Nicole Wagner, archaeologist for the Uwari National Forest. The size of the boulders is unlike a lot of the other outcrops you see around the area. It's a beautiful place. So you've got a couple of hikers here walking by some of the boulders, which look like they're just stacked on each other randomly. It says, on the Big Rock Loop Trail in Uwari National Forest, hikers Liz Sear and Nathan Charles check out two of the largest Nifty Rocks. So these look like great big boulders, roundish, if you will, of course not perfectly round, and there's a couple side by side, and then there's two stacked on top of them. They look like they were set there, but I don't think that was done by human hand. And then we have Stone Mountain in Wilkes County. The majestic granite dome at the top of Stone Mountain is thought to exhibit the greatest expanse of bare rock of any mountain in the Carolinas. The peak's lack of vegetation is due to its steep slope, which prevents soil accumulation, and to the fact that the mountain is not metamorphosized and fractured like most other bedrock in the area. This is because there have been no continental collisions in the Carolinas since the mountain was formed 335 million years ago, when present-day North America joined present-day South America and Africa. Looking at the dome from the valley below, one immediately notices dark striations, stains from rivulets of rainwater running down the rock's surface. A very unusual rock. It's like, I don't know, it's as if somebody made the top very flat and then laid a big canvas over the edge or whatever. That's what it looks like. So there's no vegetation on the sides, just the striation marks. And it's quite a large area, and it's photographed against the blue sky with lots of puffy white clouds. And then on the right, it says, photographer Douglas Hertel and his German short-haired pointer, Ziggy, paused to take in the view during a hike in Stone Mountain State Park. He's sitting beside that dog as if it were his girlfriend. He's got his arm right around the dog's shoulder, and they're sitting on a very smooth boulder at a slight angle. There's some little rainwater that's collected in a few pockets. He's looking further down at probably a slight soil covering over rocks. There doesn't seem to be any grass or other vegetation, and then all of a sudden the forest takes off, and then the foothills, and way in the distance, other foothills that are very hazy. And lastly, we're going to talk about Linville Gorge in Burke County. The mountains and the cliffs surrounding Linville Gorge provide ample opportunities for dramatic views, like the one of Table Rock Mountain from Hawks Hill Mountain, and of the rocky outcrop known as the Chimney, and they are photographed here. It says at a depth of almost 2,800 feet in some places, Linville Gorge is one of the deepest chasms in the eastern United States, earning it the nickname Grand Canyon of the East. The gorge is formed by Jonas Ridge on one side and Linville Mountain on the other. It was carved by the Linville River, known by the Cherokee as Issaquah, or River of Many Cliffs, which enters the gorge at Linville Falls. The gorge is still being carved, says Lisa Jennings, recreation manager for the Ranger District of the Pisgah National Forest. It is a living, changing place. Views across rocks here. There's no people in these pictures. This is a little rocky outcrop and then some forest and then, like I've said before, some foothills and then something way in the distance. And the next one is a different shape of rock. It's kind of a long, narrow, pointed section of rock. A little dangerous to hike this one, I would think, just because of the steep angle and the points in some of the rocks. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine, and I certainly hope you enjoyed it, and that you'll be sure to join us next time. We'll get into some of the articles for this month's reading of Our State. I'm Fred Brack, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and today's reading of Our State Magazine was underwritten, as always, by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving our community since 1974. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Our State Magazine is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call the studios, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.